Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, it is, and I don't even know what show this is. We're getting close to 150 shows, though.
Oh, my goodness.
I was going to look that
up. We had a great
up.
Time at Bartow, didn't we, last weekend?
Yes, we
great
did.
Great investigation. It was good seeing all the Paranexus members there and all the good folks from Bartow, and a big shout-out to Tom Meir and his wife for helping us and arranging that program. It was just a wonderful thing. We had a great time.
Yeah, it was nice seeing everybody, and it was a great presentation, if I do say so myself. Of course, it was better seeing everybody. And we'll hope to do that again sometime. So tonight, we welcome everybody in the chat room and those who are listening to this archive after the fact. Tonight, we have with us Steve Parsons. He's joining us again. He was on here a few months ago. And along with his colleague, Ann Winsper, we're going to be talking about time slips and EVPs and ghost gadgets and all. Steve, welcome to the program. Welcome back.
Good evening, good morning, good wherever you are.
And Anne, welcome. Glad you could join us too.
Good morning. It feels a bit like a time slip already because we're already on the 1st of October.
What is it? 2 o'clock in the morning in the UK.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you guys are crazy, but we appreciate you.
We love you anyway.
And if our live listeners tonight would like to ask questions, you're more than welcome to call in on the call-in number. Our very own John Rossi will be screening calls, so he'll talk to you and we'll get you on the air. So let's start off with time slips. Steve, what kind of work have you done in that area?
You're talking to the wrong member of Parasite, Doug. It's Anne's area of expertise.
What have you done with time slips?
Oh, absolutely loads. We've had lots of reports about time slips over the years. Oh, and there's my time slip clock. I apologize.
That's all right.
There seems to be an awful lot of reports coming from one area in Liverpool, quite close to where I'm living. And there seems to be a bit of a hot spot in that area where people are reporting slips in time or apparent slips in time. It's not just located there. I've had reports since from all over the country and from different parts of the world as well. But we do seem to have this hot spot in Liverpool. The experiences seem to vary, but they generally take the form that someone walks onto one of the streets and everything appears as it was 20 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago. The shops are different, the people are different. And there's certain other things that seem to happen in common with these time slips. Light seems to be muted and sound seems to be different. Everything seems a bit quiet. And then after this time slip experience is finished and the person comes back to normal time, as it were, everything goes back to normal, the light goes back. So they're very unusual experiences.
Huh. How long do they usually last?
They normally last a few minutes. They can last up to 10 minutes. One of the most famous ones, of course, is the one in Versailles. That one went on for quite some time and was repeated. So it varies. It can be I would say the ones around here tend to be on average about 10 minutes.
How often are they happening?
We're certainly getting reports every couple of months. Unfortunately, no matter how many times I go to this area myself, I've never managed to witness one yet. They're certainly very common.
Have you been able to get any data as to how, if whether they're recurring on a time, you know, like in a specific time slot or regularity or anything like that, or are they just random?
They seem to be quite random. The only thing in common is the area. There doesn't seem to be anything in common in the time of year, the experience that people have. Everyone has a different experience. So it's very difficult to get a handle on them because they are so different.
Do they perceive in whatever they experience that people are dressed in history-appropriate clothing or something along those lines? Are they able to interact with any people when they're experiencing this?
They do interact with people, and sometimes the people that they interact with appear as surprised to see them as they are to see the other people, which is another interesting thing. There does seem to be this interaction going on.
Mm-hmm.
There's also been a couple of cases, one of which we've looked at, where there appears to have been actual objects exchanged. So there is something very odd going on.
That's pretty nifty. So, I remember reading about one a few years ago. Maybe I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with it. Where a couple, I'm not sure if it was in the UK or whether it was someplace else in Europe, where they drove to an inn and they stopped at the inn. It was two couples on a trip someplace, and the inn, everything did not seem to have any modern appliances or anything else. I think they had dinner there and they left, and when they came back, it wasn't there.
Yeah, they wanted to go to it again.
Yeah,
there's been a few cases like that. I think there's been certainly a couple in this country that I know about, but I haven't directly investigated them. And I think there's been some in France reported as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we've had a few here in the United States. I think the last one I had read about was where a couple was driving out west, and they pulled into a town, and they found that the town seemed to be like from the 50s. As opposed to, this was either in the 70s or the 80s, and, you know, it was a transitory thing where they weren't through it all that long, but long enough to know that they had experienced something that was very unusual.
Jenny Randles has written a lot about that. Are you familiar with her work?
Yes, she did the book Time Storms, didn't she?
Which, yeah, and there was another book, I can't recall the title, that included some information on it, but it was kind of fascinating, and I always wondered. I wondered, could this possibly be true? You know, and
it does sound quite bizarre. But then, when you talk to the people that these things have happened to, they are just ordinary people going about their everyday business, and most of them have been too embarrassed to report the experiences to anyone. They just hear about the fact that I'm investigating, and they'll phone me up and tell me, and sometimes they haven't told anybody else.
I imagine it's rather unsettling.
I know a couple of people who were very disturbed by it. Gentlemen who were so disturbed by it that they really didn't tell anybody for 20 years or so, because they just couldn't believe that this had happened to them. Mm-hmm. And of course, it can be frightening. There was one chap, and because the place was so different, he thought, where am I? What's happened? And it can be a very disturbing experience.
Mm-hmm. These witnesses, they don't know each other. I mean, it's just no rhyme or reason to the particular people that experience it?
Absolutely nothing at all. They range in age, in gender, in the experience they've had. If even in education level, again, there doesn't seem to be anything that says this will always happen to this particular type of person. It does seem to be random.
Well, you know, the thing that's interesting about it is if you look at time from a nonlinear perspective and you look at it that it may be something a lot more flexible, then, you know, there's always the possibility that there can be oxbows or loops. Who knows? And you know, that may be a possible explanation for what happens, and I would assume that when it does happen, it's something that is very brief in nature, but enough for the person to be somewhat disorientated by it, in the sense that they know that wow, things aren't the way they were a few minutes ago or as I was walking down the street, which could be, yeah, very interesting.
One of the things that makes it a bit difficult to try and pin down an explanation is in some of these accounts, what the witnesses report isn't always exactly what was there at the time they report it. There was one lady and she'd moved house and she'd gone for a walk to look at the local area, and she went down a lane and it was a cobbled lane. There were houses, people outside the houses. She talked to them. She could even feel the heat from the fire in one house because they had the fire on and the door open and somebody was coming out. She carried on walking, came to a gate. There was just fields past there and there was a big pile of rubble. She came back through exactly the same scene, went back 2 weeks later, and it was a housing estate, completely different. But when she looked at one of the tithe maps of the area, it tied in exactly with what was there in the late 1800s, apart from this pile of rubble, which turned out to have been a windmill that was blown down in the 1930s. So not everything actually tied up in the scene.
That's so... Is there any kind of discussion on, I mean, what do these people witness? I mean, do they witness a change in scenery? It changes from one scene to another? Or, I mean, are they walking around a corner and they see it? Or how
it's usually as they walk onto a street or as they walk around a corner. So it doesn't, it's not something that happens while they're halfway down the street. It tends to be as they turn onto somewhere different. So it doesn't initially appear that there's something particularly odd going on. It's only when they see that people are dressed funny or there's people with horse and carts that they think there's something not quite right.
Huh. Mm.
I remember reading an account, I think it was over in Europe, where somebody was walking down the road one morning and they saw somebody that was kind of oddly dressed. And they realized that they could see that person and that person could see them, and they both walked past each other. It was just like a momentary sort of thing, and they looked kind of quizzically at each other and just kept on passing, and when the one person turned around and looked back a few minutes later, gone. Person was completely gone.
Well, that's a good lead in to the question from the chat room. Could a haunting be a time slip?
There do seem to be similarities between hauntings and time slips. It's very difficult with the paranormal to try and unpick discrete things. They all seem to flow into each other. And certainly with some of the time slip reports, I've got one of a lady who was sat on a bench eating a lunch, talking to someone, having a conversation. Again, it did have the elements of the time slip in that the light had gone dark and the sounds were very muted and there didn't seem to be many people about. And she turned away from the bloke she was talking to for a fraction of a second, and when she turned back, he was gone. So you could say that that might have been a haunting, but then what she was seeing in the rest of the street seems to tie in with time slip experiences, so there does seem to be some overlap between these type of experiences.
So what are some other incidents that you've found out or it's been reported on how these things work?
On how they actually work, it's very difficult. I'll give another case as an example. There were a couple of ladies walking down a road in Liverpool, and they hadn't been there before, and they said the road was cobbled, so they were walking down the middle of the road, and they saw a lot of businessmen who were dressed with bowler hats and canes and suits, and they thought it was a bit odd, but they hadn't been there before, so they thought maybe that's how people dress around here when they're businessmen. And they walked all the way down the street, which took them a good 5 minutes. When they got to the end, they seemed to go back into normal time, which involved the road being a very busy road. So we're not quite sure how they managed to get from one end of the road to the other without being run over in the traffic.
Huh.
Again, how do you explain that? Because they can't have been, in our modern day, walking down the road, or they would have been killed. So suggesting a mechanism for this kind of thing does get quite difficult. Actually, there is a case I'd like to bring Steve in on, because he actually has first-hand experience of this. And this is a case that happened in a church where we had missing time. Steve, can you talk about the church?
I think that's the one you're talking about. It took place, one, you're going to have to forgive me if the details get a little bit out of sync.
What, are you tired or something?
No, just forgetful.
And now you're not only tired, but you're being harassed by the radio host.
I'd managed to sneak out there for 20 minutes, and I was just nodding off quietly in the corner.
That's why I brought you in.
It took place about one summer's evening, and we'd gone to a church, an ancient church. It dates back to Saxon times, which is around about the 6th or 7th century AD. And it has a report of phantom funerals and a number of other ghostly tales attached to it. So we went one evening, and there had been a thunderstorm a little while before we arrived. We took my young daughter with me. I think she was about 7 or 8 at the time. And she was being a boisterous young girl. And in order to get rid of her for a few minutes, we set her a task to run round the church and see how quickly she could circumnavigate the church while we timed her with a clock, idea being we could wear her out. So she set off. It didn't work. We were positioned at one corner of the church, and Helen set off running. She disappeared from view around the first corner. All I was aware of, and the person with me was aware of, that Helen virtually instantaneously reappeared around the last corner of the church. So effectively, she completed 3 sides of the church in no time. We were both immediately struck by the strangeness of the event. So we said, go and run round again. And she went and ran round. And it was all perfectly normal. And we were left scratching our heads and wondering, did it really happen? A little while later, the same evening, we decided to set up our recorder, sound recorder, because one of the phenomena that have been reported at this church is the sound of the congregation singing hymns at twilight. So we set the recorder, and as we set the recorder, within a minute or two of the recorder being set, it started to rain. So we decided that we would abandon the evening and we would head for home. So we collected the recorder and went back to the car, which was probably a distance of 10, 15 yards back to the church lich gate. Mm-hmm. We climbed in the car, we put all the stuff in, and we decided to play the recorder whilst we had a cigarette and demisted the car windows. The tape ran for fully 15 minutes.
Really?
The tape, you could hear us talking at the start of the tape, and 13 minutes and 40 seconds later, you could hear us walk back complaining about the rain and saying, it's a wrap, let's give it up for a bad job. Now, our perception is that event took place in less than a minute, but the tape runs for nearly 15 minutes.
Wow.
We have no explanation. No mechanism. It happened to us.
That's amazing. Well, that kind of leads into another question. Maybe, Ann, you have some comments on this. You know, these people who get, shall we say, caught in these time slips, are they ever missed? Do people ever wonder where to go?
None of the ones that I've looked at have ever had that. If people are with other people, they tend to both have the same experience. I've had a few cases where people have been going to meet relatives or friends, and they have the time slip on the way to meet the person, and they meet the person as planned. So they don't seem to have any missing time or disappear for any period of time. They just seem to have had unusual time during their experience.
But in Steve's case, there was apparently missing time.
Apparently so, yeah.
Only missing as in with hindsight it was missing. When Helen ran around the church, we realised that something unusual had happened. But for us, nothing had. It was just the extreme rapidity, instantaneousness, that Helen must have gone through 3 sides of a church around the circumference of the church. The thing about the tape as well, we had no a recollection or no idea that there was anything wrong until we played the tape back. The tape, we checked it later, and we checked the machine, obviously, the batteries, and there was nothing untoward with that. So we didn't have any perception of strangeness of time, except after the event.
So on the tape, how many of you were there?
There was myself, two others, including Helen.
Okay.
So there were two adults, one child.
Okay, and so on this tape, during the time, you know, that the middle of that tape, could you hear anything? I mean, was there any activity?
Nothing that we could identify, and nothing that we would say was unusual, because we'd set up the recorder and we'd walked away from it, and then it started to rain, so we walked back. Now, to sort of verify that we were actually gone for a very short period of time, and it wasn't just we forgot and lost track of time, as we walk away from the recorder, you can actually hear me, the strike of a cigarette lighter as I lit a cigarette as we walked away. Now, I threw that cigarette away as we came back to the recorder, because it literally was a minute and a half that we were gone. It started to rain instantaneously. So my perception of it is that we were only gone for a few seconds, less than a minute and a half, and we decided to call it a wrap. The tape doesn't confirm that.
Was it a tape or a digital?
It was a tape.
Okay.
It was a standard C60.
So I guess my question would be, and I'm sure you thought of this, but could it be that, you know, the tape mechanism sped up for some odd reason and then went back to normal shortly thereafter, so that you would have, it would seem like there's a whole bunch of tape recorder, but it really wasn't? I mean, could that be a possibility?
It's something that we did consider, and we did examine the machine and the tape and play it backwards and forwards several times. So there doesn't appear to be. The tape for that 13 minutes has been recorded. It seems to have been recorded properly. There doesn't appear to be any malfunction with the equipment. And
there were some sounds on the tape. There's bits of bird song, and you can hear the wind blowing in the trees. So it sounds like...
Okay, that's what I wanted to know, yeah.
Right?
So you could hear stuff going on.
Yeah, stuff, but nothing unusual or
but there
untoward
sounds.
Or interesting.
Right.
There was no mechanic, maniacal laughter or demonic sounds or the sounds of wormholes opening and closing.
So what about Helen? I mean, did you ask her? Did she actually run around the church or whatever?
When she got back, she had noticed nothing untoward either. From her impressions, she had completed a circuit of the church, was slightly breathless, excited, as eight-year-olds usually are, and keen to go round again.
There you go, yeah.
Huh. Well, that's pretty fascinating. And that was in Liverpool as well?
Well, not very far away, out in the Cheshire countryside.
We did have quite an amusing one as well, didn't we, on the way to Neston once, which... could be a time slip or could be something else. Our cycle.
I think you can tell that story.
We were driving somewhere. I won't tell you where, but it was paranormally related. And it's lots of little country roads, typical English country roads, quite narrow. And we came up behind a cyclist. We noticed him because we couldn't get past him, and he was wearing very tight lycra, which is quite inappropriate in somebody that age. So eventually...
we still have that here in Florida.
We did get to a bit of road where we could overtake him, and I remember it distinctly because Steve leaned out of the window and shouted something at him as we drove past. We went past him... over a roundabout, carried on down the country lanes, and 3 miles later, we came up behind the same cyclist again.
Really?
Now, we know the roads around there like the back of our hands. There is absolutely no way a cyclist could have got there before us. We didn't stop for anything. So either we had a funny time slip, or there were two twin cyclists in matching appalling lycra.
Bad lycra, there you go. Not even time is good to lycra. Or some things are impervious to time slips. Lycra.
That's a scam.
Oh, that is scary.
You know, it's interesting. These types of things seem to happen, you know, occasionally to people. And, you know, you just got to wonder what, you know, it's almost like there's a, I mean, you think of the movie The Matrix, you know, with deja vu or a little glitch in the software.
Yeah, where it's a hiccup and then it happens.
I think part of it. Go on, Em.
No, I was just going to say the problem is it's like most of the ghost reports. You only hear about it afterwards and the circumstances have changed by the time you get to look at it. So it's very, very hard to pin these things down.
The other problem as well is, and we've heard it tonight from all of us, is the rush to offer an explanation. Is it caused by quantum physics? Is it caused by something else? Is it related to hauntings? And I think that's probably the wrong approach to take with time slips and also with ghosts, hauntings, apparitions. Anne has been documenting in detail people's accounts of time slip phenomena, and we have been documenting in detail people's experiences of haunting phenomena, because that has to be the first stage of any scientific process, which is one simply of observe and document. I think it might actually be misleading if we start to theorize and hypothesize about the mechanisms that might be taking place.
Yeah, I can see your point there. You know, the one question I have...
It's fun to speculate.
Sure. And some of those areas, have you guys done any, you know, geomagnetic readings at all to see whether there's any fluctuations, or are you familiarized yourself with what's underground water, underground chemical composition, or composition of you know, the layers of the earth underneath there? I mean, I'm just wondering if, you know, is a possible hypothetical thing, maybe there's some sort of interference in the geomagnetic fields, and maybe somehow they can, you know, cause a slip. Who knows? You know, just curious.
Go on, Steve.
Well, there is something interesting about the location in Liverpool that we did identify very, very early on. And it is a possible, I mean, it's not an idea that we've come up with, but others have suggested that high levels of electromagnetic energy could cause people to have paranormal-like experiences. But the area in Liverpool where the vast majority of time slips are located are very close to and inside the Liverpool Loop Underground Railway, which is about 60 yards underground, and is actually almost a perfect loop around Liverpool city centre, running on 650 volts AC to very, very big transformer systems. And it must generate a very large electromagnetic effect within the loop itself and presumably within the surrounding area. What we did also notice is that, and quite interestingly, and this came about almost by accident when we were plotting local cases to the Liverpool area onto a map, we noticed that they were all very close to the we have the Mersey Tunnel that runs underneath the River Mersey, saves us using the ferry across the Mersey because that's always full of American tourists. The tunnel is effectively a 2 mile long infrasound generator, and we were surprised by the number of paranormal cases that are either very close to the Mersey Tunnel and could be possibly due to infrasound, or inside the electric loop of the underground railway. So there are two ideas we've played with in the past, but I think the approach of just collecting the information before we try hypothesizing is probably the best approach nowadays.
Oh yeah, for sure.
That's interesting. So let's move into EVPs. I wanted to talk about the psychology of EVP. I think you had some thoughts on that, didn't you, Steve?
No, it's still with Anne.
Pardon me? Oh, still with Anne?
I'm having a really easy
voice.
What
are we having you on for? Jeepers. Just kidding.
I'm just the UK Yankee guy.
He just wants to go back to napping, I'm sure.
Yeah. So we get to the gadgets.
Okay, we'll get to you and the gadgets. And Ann, talk to us about the psychology of EVPs or the psychology of trying to fall asleep at 2:30 in the morning.
Is that the time?
Falling asleep at 2:30 in the morning is the easy one. I can
there
do that.
The problem is I'm wide awake now.
Thanks a lot.
Well, when you're getting up at 5 to do ghost in 5 hours to do ghosty things, I've got to get up in 5 hours to see the plumber. So at least you're doing something exciting tomorrow morning.
We can't talk about plumbers. This is American radio.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, we have no plumbers here. Especially in the paranormal field.
Yes, EVP. Steve has done some work on EVP. We've both looked at EVP. But I did a piece of work for my dissertation looking at EVP. When people actually do get sounds when they're recording EVP, sometimes it's quite clear what's said, sometimes it's very unclear. What I was trying to look at was whether people who believe in the paranormal are more likely to think they've heard something, and whether skeptics are less likely to hear something, even if there is something on the tape. Because I know we always assume that people who believe in the paranormal will believe anything, and that skeptics believe nothing, but you know, no one's actually done these studies to prove that that's true or not, and it might be quite simplistic. So I spent some time playing some poor university students lots and lots of sound clips and asking them if they could hear anything. Some of them I told them it was just a listening task, and some of them I told them it was really spooky dead people on the tape, which freaked some of them out, but I like to scare students occasionally. And what we actually found was that people who believe in the paranormal are actually better at distinguishing things than people who don't believe in the paranormal. So it looks like skeptics are actually blocking out a whole area of stuff because they don't believe it and don't want to hear it, whereas people who believe mildly in the paranormal actually seem to perceive events better, which is quite interesting when we're looking at reports of what people have seen and heard.
That's interesting.
Well, we just did the same thing last week at the Bartow Courthouse, where we took a minor, or took a little survey, and that was our hypothesis, was the fact that most of the folks would, if their belief system was geared towards believing in the paranormal, that they would have an experience, and we're still working on the data from that, but. That's very interesting. And what's really interesting about it is perhaps those who have a little bit of belief don't completely shut things down where a skeptic would.
Yes, and there's also been, of course, when everyone does research, they look at people who really strongly believe in the paranormal. So there's been lots of tests showing that people with strong belief are actually worse at cognitive tasks, whereas people with a slight bit of belief, it now appears from the study I've done, actually seems to have an advantage. So it could be an advantage to have a slight bit of belief. But hopefully I can expand all this in a PhD. So again, I put the call out. If anyone wants a PhD student, I'm ready and waiting.
Uh-huh. There you go. That's good.
So that's down off to Florida then?
Yeah.
Well, I'm hoping so.
Enjoy the sunshine. Yep.
So
don't forget the lycra.
Oh yeah, we got plenty of that down here.
Oh, you don't see a middle-aged woman in lycra.
Oh no, au contraire. Go to dinner. You'll see more than you want.
So Anne, so what you're saying, what you're trying to study, is the impact that belief has on paranormal experiences.
Initially I've just been looking at EVP and how people perceive sound and whether they hear anything at all and whether they actually give it a paranormal spin depending on their belief. I'm quite keen to show that there is some sort of difference in how skeptics look at things as well, because I think being total I don't believe in anything kind of skeptic must cause some sort of cognitive deficit.
I'm just curious, Anne, in regards to your research, have any of the folks that, have you actually put stuff in there that could simulate an EVP? And if so, if you have done that, do the people with that proclivity to believe a little bit, are they hitting it on the head as far as interpreting what you've put there?
I only actually put in single words for them to listen to. One of the things I want to expand onto in the next series of tests is actually trying to put in phrases and seeing how people interpret the phrases. Obviously, with the time limits of the study, I had to concentrate on one bit, so it was simple words or no words, and can you hear anything? And if you can, I did ask them if they heard anything, what they thought they'd heard, but they tended to be quite non-specific. There was nothing particularly interesting in that.
Because it's been my experience, one of the reasons it just seems to me that, you know, when we've run into a lot of other groups that may not take the same approach that we do, that a lot of times somebody will say, I've got this EVP, and the minute that they tell you what they think it is, then everybody in the room all hears it.
Well, that was the problem with the Rowdy stuff. When he played his, obviously you know this, but when he played his stuff to people, he told them what they should hear first, and if they said, yes, I did hear that, that was classed as a hit. And if they said, no, I don't hear that, he classed them as a poor listener and discounted their evidence.
And who is this?
But yes, as soon as you tell somebody what they should be hearing, that's what they'll hear. I mean, you see it all the time in things like pop songs where people mishear the words and they tell someone else and they mishear it as well. So,
and who is this that you're talking about?
Rowdy's. He did a lot of the well-known studies into EVP.
It kind of reminds me of that psychological experiment or the story about Hans the intelligent horse, where what Hans would always, you know, hit his paw so many hoofs so many times, and then people were amazed. But Hans was picking up cues from his you know, the guy
trainer.
Who owned him. Yeah, his trainer.
I think that's a similarity.
There's this argument about what's on the tape, what isn't on the tape, is it normal, is it paranormal? It's being led by psychologists, and I'm sorry, Anne, but I'm going to have a go at psychologists now. Because all of the arguments, all of the to-ing and fro-ing has been about, are the voices paranormal? Are they really hearing the voices of the dead? What we should really be concentrating on, first of all, is how are the voices getting onto the recorders? Are the mechanisms understood properly? Are the controls properly in place? People talk about, and I've been on group investigations where the group have shown an EVP experiment with a Faraday cage, and they've demonstrated the effectiveness of the Faraday cage by placing a mobile phone inside it and dialing the number, and of course the phone doesn't work. But if you place a VHF radio inside the Faraday cage, it works perfectly. It's all to do with mesh size, unearthing. It's why you can use your mobile phone inside a jetliner. We don't necessarily know that the voices are anything but explainable. We live in a radio ocean, an electromagnetic ocean. If your radio is on, we're surrounded by radio waves from cell phones, from Wi-Fi, from emergency services.
We're jets, literally immersed.
Satellite. We are. We're drowning in electromagnetic energy. Is it any wonder that from time to time a piece of this electronic scatter breaks through onto a recorder? Or is it, as some radio engineers looking at Konstantin Raudiva's work have suggested, that his controls were excellent, that his Faraday cages and earths were first class, and that they had looked at the system of controls that he put in place, and after looking at that system of controls, said, we can't explain why these voices are appearing on the recorder. They shouldn't be there. The physicists weren't interested in what the voices were saying. The physicists were saying, we can't offer a reasonable explanation as to why they're there and why they've been recorded. And I think that's much more interesting than psychobabble arguments about, do you hear it? Is it saying, well, I'm a ghost? Or is it something entirely different? Are we really hearing them? Who cares?
I want to disagree slightly with you there, because there is a lot of research going on looking at what you're talking about. That's what all places, oh, I can't remember the name of them, there is quite a big group doing a lot of research on the sort of thing you're talking about. And one of the reasons I did my study is because there's so many ghost hunters now running around going, I heard this, I heard this, I heard the voice of the devil. And nobody's actually looking at what these people are actually hearing and basically why they're coming out with such rubbish. So there is quite a big body of evidence for people looking at the sort of thing you're talking about, whereas I found
not at the group level, because there are nobody's ever looked at the sort of rubbish recorders that most ghost hunters take out into the field.
Not in paranormal. Yeah. There are, I wish I could remember the name of the place, but there is some big international place who are looking at that sort of thing and trying to replicate EVPs. At group level, they're all running around being, in the nicest possible way, nutters, which is why I want to see why they're doing that.
Well, I think your point about the physicists is a great point, because rather than walk away and shake their heads and say, well, we don't know what it is, why don't they give us, as physicists, they should have some understanding about the mechanics of how fields interact with each other. So there's got to be all kinds of aberrations and mutations just from the fields continually interacting. And then, like we talked about before, we're constantly bombarded from particles that get through the atmosphere, from space, from all over the place. And we don't know how they interact.
Well, actually, we do. And that's the beauty of physics, because we do know how they interact. And one of the great things about radio waves, electromagnetic waves, is that we know and have known for a long time how to shield them properly. It's not quite as simple as wrap it in tin foil and tie it to a stake in the ground, but it can be done. And it's also quite affordable. It's a relatively simple fix if you want to study EVP in the field. Quite recently, I was asked to do some in-field EVP recordings using a diode, a germanium diode, identical to that which Konstantin Raudiv used and claimed great results from. We built a shield, a Faraday cage, that was impervious simply by making the whole arrangement out of 4 millimeter thick lead sheathing, earthing it, and then putting the recorder, the microphone, the germanium diode, and all of the cables inside the lead box. If we'd got a voice on that lead box, I would be standing on top of Oxford Castle shouting, "It's paranormal." We didn't, fortunately. But there have been instances where people have got, under that degree of control, unusual, inexplicable recordings that sound like voices and that have left the physicists baffled as to why they're there and how they got there and what mechanisms.
Wasn't Ying doing something similar to that, Doug, where she was putting the... as airtight as the Faraday's cage, but she was doing something similar. yeah, absolutely. But, it was similar, where it was in an isolated place, there were no people around, and she was getting some interesting, things periodically. So that's really a very interesting way of approaching it. And right, how would you possibly explain something if it's in there under those circumstances?
Well, we keep using it. We're trying it in the field regularly. It's small enough and just light enough to be portable. And we leave it recording. We don't ask it any questions. It's just placed. We can't, because everything's inside this lead box.
Mm-hmm.
There are some forms of electromagnetic, very high energy particles that would penetrate it from outer space, cosmic energy, cosmic ray energy. But there are no known Earth radio or electronic waves that will penetrate 4 millimeters of Earth lead. So if we get a voice on that recorder, that will be interesting, and we'll take some explaining.
So when you say earth it, you're burying it? Is that what you mean?
No, we're actually the box itself is bonded to either the structural earth of the building or
grounded.
So it's grounded. Yeah, we have a slight difference.
Sure.
Separated by common language again.
I know. Well, that's cool. It's good to hear different terms. So So it's grounded or earthed, and you're getting that. Well, let's segue then into, unless Anne's got some more to comment on EVPs.
No, I'm still digging through my references, trying to find the other stuff. Again, because I'm... What Steve hasn't said is we try and cover both sides of the field. So he's playing with the gadgets and I'm looking at the psychology of the people. As he said before, we do concentrate on just recording what's happening. That's why I call myself a psychical phenomenologist, when I can say it, because I'm looking at the phenomenology of the field, what people are reporting, what they're experiencing. Because at the end of the day, that's what we've got to start with, is what people are reporting to us. And then Steve gets to play with his gadgets afterwards.
Well, see, and that's, I agree. I mean, there's several sides to EVP research. And, I mean, there's a lot of questions about all types of it. You know, how's it getting, you know, put on the media, whether it's digital or tape or whatever. But then there's also the psychology of it. And what does it mean? You know, what does it mean to the human condition, as I often say? And that's fascinating to me, too. What does it mean for us? What does it tell us? So there's a lot of sides to it. Well, Steve, what other gadgets are you using in your research?
Well, at the moment, actually, EVP leads nicely into some of the gadgets that are very high on my radar. And I use that term advisedly because ghost gadget number one is the iPhone apps. We've been testing a lot of them lately simply because they are, as you can imagine, they are unbelievable. Ghost radar, the iOvilus.
Right.
I think when I last looked, there was about 1,500 paranormal or ghost hunter related apps.
Really?
Now, it sounds like it's for entertainment. It sounds like it's comedy. How can an iPhone or a smartphone be used as a ghost hunting gadget? But incredibly, the internet is filling up with groups who are using these iPhones with their various sensors and apps as serious ghost hunting tools, and are claiming that the results that they're getting from these apps are evidence of paranormality, and are presenting their cases based on the bleep of a radar or whether the little planchette on the iPhone dial moves across different letters and words. Go figure. Why are people suddenly turning to the iPhone? Is this the latest ghost hunting gadget in the ghost hunting gadgetry seems to have following a trend of it's sort of a McDonald's ghost gadget phenomena. Everybody
comes in a Happy Meal here, Steve.
Yeah. They want it instantly. They want it large. They don't want to wait around for the results. They want it now. We call it the McDonald's culture over here. And we went through, first of all, it was, let's all go out and buy an EMF meter. Let's all detect ghosts with EMF meters. Went through the K2 meter with, let's all talk to ghosts and communicate to ghosts with EMF meters. But then people got bored with the EMF meter. And they've gone on now to the EVP, where you can take a very basic digital recorder out into a haunted location, switch it on, ask a few questions, get back, and you're guaranteed virtually to have something that after 5 minutes of playing with it on your laptop with Audacity or SoundForge, you will have something paranormal to show all of your listeners on your YouTube channel or on your website. There are some serious gadgets, though, that I think deserve a second glance, probably more than a second glance, and that's the move towards the devices that come under a broad category of the Frank's box and the other mini box type gadgets, because let's clear away all of the nonsense about these devices. They are interesting in that one or two of them do seem to be an interesting take on Raudiva's original idea of EVP research, namely the Spiricom device. And they might be worth paying a little more attention to. We've tried one of the Frank's boxes, well, one of the mini boxes, and one of the Shacks out in the field, and the results very early results are disappointing and slightly comical. People are rather getting to hear what they want to hear, but they are also like, and this is more Anne's domain, they are a bit like crack cocaine. They're very, very addictive. People are rapidly beguiled by them. People become entranced and captivated by the garbled output of these boxes. But nonetheless, once in a while, they do seem to throw up something unusual. Very, very early days for those types of device. And we really should sit down and maybe devise some experiments. But it's the iPhones.
Most of the people out there don't actually want serious scientific gadgets to do serious
things.
They want something that will back up them saying, I felt something spooky. And if they can show something with flashing lights and say, that proves something spooky just happened to me, that's what they're going to run with.
So let's use your iPhone. That's perfect. Perfect distancing gadget. In fact, I have mine ready with me in the haunted Oxford Castle here. And if we can maybe do some live ghost gadgetry on air, it might work. We might see if we can switch the ghost radar on or the iOvilus, which has a vocabulary of, I don't know, 4,000-odd words for the spirits to choose from. It's just, here we go, it's just on hopefully the ghosts and spirits of Oxford Castle, Oxford Jail, can interact with this device. I'm sure they've all seen the iPhone.
They're probably pretty good at texting by now, I would imagine.
Well, I mean, they've been around 1,000. Here we go. It's actually talking. It said, halt, don't. So do we halt or don't we?
Sure, it didn't say, get out, Steve.
Yeah.
Switch me off.
No, you tell them no. They got to stay here and talk to us. We're live on the air.
So that is the new current round of ghost gadgets, the iPhone app. There are one or two, though, that are seriously useful. If people would like to go to the Parascience website, which is www.parascience.org.uk, we recently put on a literature review that looked at infrasound and its relationship with the paranormal. And in there, you will discover that you can use one iPhone app in particular to give you an early heads up if infrasound might be present. You can't measure it directly, but the iPhone app can be used to give you an early heads up about the increased probability of infrasound being present at the location.
And which app is that?
The app's called SPL. It's by Studio 6. And it's a handy little device if it's used properly. Like sound recorders are good if they're used properly, but in the wrong hands, we end up. Anne and I probably spend the majority of our time undoing the work of paranormal investigators and the mythology that they build up around their ghost gadgetry and the results that they obtain from their ghost gadgets. The orb is another one. Again, if you go to the Parascience website, you'll see another article in which 3D photography was used for the first time to destroy the orb myth. So gadgets, they can be used properly and they can be an advantage and they can be helpful, or they can be misused and they can cause us no end of trouble.
I'm sorry, but you're wrong about orbs. They're spirits. They're sentient entities.
I've seen faces in some of them.
That's right.
And different colors, pink for girls and blue for boys.
I like that, Anne. That's very good.
That's right.
And some of them are angels and some of them are archangels. I've read them too.
Oh, and I've seen demon orbs. I've seen little angels going back to heaven when it's raining.
I've seen those. No doubt about it. We got plenty of people that would contact us about that from time to time. And what's really amazing...
You're going to get hate mail now, having said all
this. Oh, you betcha.
Oh, boy.
You betcha. We've been chastised severely for our not being non-believers or being skeptical about it, you know, because those folks are the type of folks that will present their data, and then when we go, like, well, it could be this or it could be that, and they go, well, thank you anyway. We know they're spirits, and, you know, like, get on board or forget about you guys.
Well, we always send them off to and suggest that they join the Flat Earth Society.
Yeah, no kidding. That's a good one.
Well, that's where we're going to refer all of ours from now on.
Mm-hmm. Or yeah, it's the last sanctuary of the old believer.
Either the Flat Earth or the Hollow Earth theory. A Hollow Earth isn't bad either. We can just send them right down to the...
That's where they come from. Yeah. Orbs come from the Hollow Earth. What's wrong with you?
I'm sorry. I forgot, Billy.
I also, going back again to gadgets, just as we end, coming towards the end, is the media, because a TV is a gadget, so it's a bad link, but hey. Is a lot of people, they actually don't know any better because they see TV ghost hunters. There's a new one Discovery Channel just touting now. Now, Discovery is a documentary channel.
Yeah.
It should be leading the way with serious investigation, serious demonstrations of equipment or methods being used, not having two guys going around with what's basically rubbish equipment used wrongly.
See, serious science doesn't sell soda or cosmetics or different brands of toilet paper or whatever, you know. I mean, they sold out a long time ago. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, by, you know, cozying up to these folks, because they're promoting nothing but pseudoscience, and it's just like, that's the wrong thing to do.
Everything I know, I learned the most haunted.
There are lots of people out there who want more than most haunted, who want more than ghost hunters, more than paranormal state. And they buy soap powder, and they buy burgers, and they buy the rest of the stuff too. Maybe, you know, one broadcaster one day will wake up to that market. But the people watching these shows, they don't know any different, because they see the experts on these shows using this equipment, showing them how it's done. You two can go off and be a ghost hunter. Just take your iPhone and your Frank's box and go into the cemetery and the haunted graveyard and talk to the dead.
Yep.
Works for me. Well, you know, this hour has kind of gone fast. We're down to 2-3 minutes.
Shooting next month for a discussion on Lycra.
Lycra, yeah.
let's open up the floor. What's your favorite color? We'll ask our audience. And do you wear them outside?
Day glow.
Well, we've had an interesting discussion on time slips, EVPs, psychology of EVPs, ghost gadgets, and different things, and you know, fascinating conversation. Now, next week, please join us. We will have J.C. Johnson, and he will be here to discuss a topic that has been long in coming for some of those among us, and that is skinwalkers. Plus, we're also going to talk about the Bigfoot thing, the sighting that he had. It's a fascinating thing if you are familiar with the post on Paranexus. If you have not been to Paranexus, we invite you to come and take a look at Paranexus.org. Join us. We're a nonprofit association of anomalous researchers. We'd love to have you as a member. A lot of benefits. Steve, thanks so much for rejoining us again.
Hey, it's been my pleasure.
And Anne,
Steve, it's been really nice.
Anne,
no, thanks, guys.
Nice having you too.
Thank you.
Pleasure, Anne.
Thank you.
Time slips and all, and we wish you guys the best. We thank you very kindly for staying up so late to join us.
Yeah, really.
I'm off to put my Lycra pajamas on and get back to bed.
Sleep tight, Steve.
Oh, honey. Listen, we will cut you both loose so you can get to bed. And again, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Good night, everybody. Good night, John Boy. Good night, Mitch.
Good night, Ann. And we appreciate all of those in our chat room joining us live, and we appreciate those who listen to the archive. I don't know if this is a really high number, but I think it's high. And you know, we've had over 76,000 listens to our shows. We've been now doing the past 2.5 years, Grant.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's always a pleasure, you know, and we really appreciate our audience support. And, you know, we welcome you to come around and hang with us every Thursday night, because we're going to be here.
Yes, and also join us Sunday night at 10 p.m. Eastern for Informal Paranormal with John Rossi and Mike Jones. I'm sure they will have an interesting show as well. Until next week, we wish everybody a great week. Thanks for joining us, and good night.
Good night, everybody.